Bon, sans micro, quelle est la taille moyenne des logements en Suède, hein? En France, c'est 63 mètres carrés, donc c'est pour moi.
It depends on how you count, of course. But I think the recent figure is around 65 to 70, and this I say that because there's also been this discussion about how you count. But there's quite, from a European standpoint, it's the average size of an apartment, and then there's also sort of per capita use of the space. And when you look at comparisons for the number of rooms, for example, per person, we're about average in a European perspective. And this is changing now, so that's why I say this number is sort of it's also being contested by the fact that housing prices are so extreme in Sweden, in a European perspective as well. It's one of the highest, and I can't remember now if it's a third the average of the sort of amount spent on housing. Over a third of your income, and this is can be compared to the fact that a lot of private tenants, you won't be able to rent an apartment if you have usually it's a one quarter or up to one third of your salary, otherwise you won't be able to get a contract. But this, of course, people are paying what they were paying to live somewhere. So this the relationship between average space, the number of rooms, and the price, I think is the interesting, and this is where we're seeing a change within the last decade as well. So I guess a long answer to say I don't have the exact number between 65 and 70. Sorry.
Au-delà de la création d'éco-quartiers...
Tu comprends un peu.
Ah, je peux faire en anglais sinon. En fait, non, je vais en français. au-delà de la création d'éco-quartiers, qu'en est-il de la politique de rénovation des bâtiments qu'on a en centre-ville pour une amélioration de la qualité environnementale?
So if I understood it correctly, I think the question about refurbishment and renovation has been, this is also where there's a difference in the political discourse, right? Because these types of eco-districts, they are quite politically, it's political gold in terms of you have these frontline developments that you can show and showcase. At the same time, we have this existing stock, which is a huge problem. And you talk about it in terms of the areas that I showed, like these areas being a problem. But if you look at this, and my colleagues have looked at this, what are the housing typologies that are actually using energy, for example, or that where we have a problem? Well, it's the villas, the detached single-family homes. But that's a political impossibility. You have very strong associations and interests for this. So there's also been this push to say, we have these types of areas that we badly need to renovate, and this is being done as well, and it's being done under the premise of ecological development or eco-renovation. But what this means, it's also what other colleagues of mine have looked at as green gentrification. Right, so under the premise of green and sustainability, people are being displaced because they can't afford to move back after these eco-efficient renovations. And this has spurred a huge discussion, of course, of who should pay. Is it the tenants that should pay? Is it the real estate owners? Because they are the ones who are actually in a long-term perspective, right? If you do a renovation on your property to use less resources. That's a good investment. Or is it the state? So now in Sweden, since a few years back, you have these investment subsidies for eco-renovation. This has not been necessarily used to the capacity that the government intended, and it's also been followed up by this question of how do you actually ensure that this doesn't lead to increased rents and so on. But I'm saying this also because this is the current discussion, is that these areas are the ones we need to target. But I would say this is a fallacy or a paradox in that we're avoiding to talk about the big existing stock. That's the big problem. So if you look at, for example, per capita footprint in these types of, and I'm generalizing by showing this, which I shouldn't be doing, but these types of areas, it's quite low per capita footprint, right? It's inefficient buildings, but mainly to do with income, because income is the biggest indicator of ecological footprint. These are not the households and the housing that's actually has the highest footprint. And that's sensitive, of course, to discuss. So it's easy, quite easy to talk about eco-renovations of these areas, and it's much harder in other aspects. You're trying to tackle that by, for example, again, subsidies for homeowners to do renovations or to do eco-renovations, but at the same time, there's big subsidies for renovations in general. So if you own a home, you can get a subsidy to do renovations, and this is sort of a job-creating policy, right? Generate jobs. Colleagues of mine has looked at the metabolism this causes in terms of the turnaround. So if you renovate your kitchen every 5 years, or if you throw out this and put in that, that has a huge ecological footprint. So there's these, as always, these the two hands of the government policies, right? But it also has to do with how we talk about who is the one. Is this the problem, or is someone else, some other type of housing typology, the problem?
Peut-être vous pouvez nous en dire un peu plus sur sur la population qui habite ces écoquartiers. Est-ce que c'est vraiment une population de... Enfin, nous, en France, on appelle ça les bobos. voilà. Et où est-ce qu'il y a un effort pour promouvoir la mixité? Et j'ai peut-être une autre question. On entend aussi souvent parler en termes d'appropriation de ces quartiers, au fond, que pour qu'ils aient les résultats écologiques escomptés, il faut certains comportements de la population qui y habite. Alors, vous nous avez parlé de l'effet rebond, de la consommation d'eau, etc. Mais est-ce que s'il s'agit d'une population très éduquée aux questions écologiques, a priori, on ne rencontre pas ces problèmes en Suède?
Yeah, so this is, I'll start with the second question. This has been the object of a lot of research, partly this Norwegian researcher I showed, Erling Holden, has done research on this, but also colleagues of mine in the Swedish context. And you can see that while both Sweden and Norway have we score high on environmental awareness, we're of course high consuming countries. And so how does this work? And even within households or people that define themselves as environmentally conscious, you will have a high consumption. And that's mostly linked to income. That keeps on, I mean, housing typology is important in this. Again, if you live in a detached, older house or not, if you live. So from that perspective, it's still, you can discuss whether the households that live in Hammarby Sjöstad or other eco-developments, if they lived in another house, would they consume even more? Of course, so it's quite unfair to sort of target them double to say that you are consuming more, because they would consume even more if they lived somewhere else or in this villa. But there is this contradiction in that the target groups for these areas are these educated, as you said, and yeah, the bobos, the sort of idea of the life you're leading here, which is very much connected to these everyday practices of recycling or biking to work and so on, very symbolic practices that have quite small impact, again, in studies where it's actually, again, income, it's how large you live and so on, how many people you are per household, but the symbol aspects are very strong, and the biggest indicator being flying, of course. So, I mean, income, and then you can fly. And this has been shown that, of course, I mean, these households fly as much, if not more, than compared to the average. And the question about the diversity of the areas, a lot of the developments have had this as a, I mean, that's a been simplified as the social sustainability, right? Is that we have a mixed mixed development, and the mix is an attempt to have different sized apartments. I've looked at another development in Gothenburg, which this was the ambition from the beginning. But this, in the end, the developers actually saw that the smaller apartments, the two-room apartments, they sell better. So then they ended up building more of those anyways. So even though ambitions might be high to have sort of larger apartments to get in families and so on, it's limited. Also when it comes to form of tenure, so a majority of the apartments are tenant-owned. So it's a Swedish form of tenure that's quite specific, that's bostadsrätt. You have you basically are part of an association, thereby you have the right to live in the apartment. You don't technically own your apartment, but you trade it. I mean, you sell it and you earn a lot of money. So it's a speculative tenure form. And it's a minority of rental apartments. And this has been another discussion, whether this could be a way of mixing socially, but of course, even the rental apartments are extremely high cost. The price of production in housing production in Sweden is very high, according to the developers. And so the actual price of production is high. The price of the housing price is even higher, because the margins are also very high. Again, from a European comparison, the numbers vary, but some have talked about up to 15 to 20% margin. And that's extreme. Very few industries have that. You could also argue that it's a higher risk and so on. But so the pricing simply in new production simply means that these areas aren't accessible to a large part of the population. And maybe I can just add this, it's also this argument that people will be willing to pay more if it's an eco friendly, right? So that's a very active marketing as well. And this is sort of a paradox as well, because studies have shown that it doesn't necessarily cost more. It of course depends on how you count. If you as a company are used to driving these types of projects, or if you have to sort of for each new development initiate a new project, that's costly. So there's also this assumption that you can sort of get even more money that you have to get more money out if you want to build this type of development, which is also problematic.
Can you say a word about the difference between the rent levels in the existing housing stock as compared to the new housing stock?
It's quite interesting in Sweden, the system of how rents are set, and this is a big discussion, of course. The previous, or the sort of the basis for the rent system is sort of the value of use. So the existing stock, there's been a lot of discussions about people with very cheap rents in large apartments that you want to sort of move to smaller, newly built apartments to free up these large apartments for families. But the price of new production is so high. But I would say that, so I can't remember now the average rent in Hammarby Sjöstad, but a recent project in Malmö called Greenhouse by the municipal housing company there, which is sort of targeted also as this environmentally friendly living. I think the average apartment there, if I remember correctly, was around, okay, translating to euros, but like 110 euros. Oh, no. What, 1,100 euros. And to be compared with another development, a new eco-development in a smaller town in Sweden, where the rent was, for the same average apartment, was 800 euros. So there's a big, of course, you could say that it's because it's...
Per month.
You could say, of course, that it's because it's Malmö or not, but these, the new production rates will also differ greatly. Whereas in the existing stock, again, just from this, because I was part of the jury for a sustainability prize in the municipal housing companies in Sweden, and we did this type of exercise, whereas the average stock apartment, again, was about 700. So I think, I mean, and this was just in those numbers. So what we were arguing was saying, why is this development in Malmö so much higher than this other development, but also, of course, compared to the existing stock? But this is not, say, I don't have like the average Swedish rental levels in the existing, but there is this problem of the new production, new produced rental apartments being extremely costly, and of course, again, this question of who gets access to them. Because a lot of people are willing to pay a large part of their salary to live, because they need a place to live, but they won't get a contract, and because it's this rule about one third or one quarter of your income being rent. So this means, colleagues of mine have looked at in Stockholm, this actually means that a sort of average salary for a single woman is below what a lot of the municipal housing companies would ask for you as income to be able to have a contract, a rental contract. So this means that women, which generally then have a lower salary, and this is sort of the average single woman, can't afford to live within Stockholm. And if you then also add sort of a single mother with a child, it's even more impossible, and so on. So this is quite alarming, and this is for both, of course, then the new production, but also the existing stock. And there it's a problem of sort of turnaround, where there's very slow turnaround. As I said, these perhaps the existing contracts and people that could move but aren't incentivized to move in different ways. And this is a big discussion about how do you sort of, can you build to feed this housing career, or this idea of trickle-down effects, right? That you build new somewhere, and this will solve problems up the line. This has not been shown to be true anywhere. This is not an evidence-based understanding, but it's still a very strong policy. This trickle-down effect that, oh, if we just build it somewhere, if we build these new developments, it will free up apartments somewhere. But it doesn't. A recent study shows that the eco-renovations take over, and then you sort of push marginalized people further and further. So it's very tricky. Yeah.
Bonjour. J'avais une question, enfin déjà un constat. Moi j'ai l'impression que, bien que vous ayez parlé de la manière d'adapter l'habitat à la cellule familiale, à son évolution, à la culture locale, etc., et je trouve qu'il y a un énorme effet d'uniformisation des constructions et des quartiers, peut-être dû à un excès de conceptualisation, je ne sais pas. Et est-ce que vous avez connaissance, au plan des études académiques, de travaux qui conduiraient à essayer de se réapproprier les architectures traditionnelles et aussi les modes de construction, parce qu'il y a eu des périodes où on a fait beaucoup de bêtises, mais les anciens, ils avaient beaucoup de bon sens. Donc est-ce qu'il y a des travaux qui iraient dans ce sens, de dire on cherche à faire de l'habitat durable, mais aussi de l'habitat qui est de la personnalité, qui marque... l'empreinte géographique, qu'on sache dans quel pays on est quand on voit les constructions et tout ça. Et est-ce que vous, et vous-même, quel est votre point de vue là-dessus ? Merci. Et c'était la dernière question.
Yeah. I'll try to keep it short, but this is something I'm very interested in myself. I think, first of all, there's a issue again with the symbol value of certain developments, and I think especially I shouldn't speak ill of where we are right now, but the Swedish smart city concept is also, it's an export product, right? So the whole idea is that it should look the same everywhere, and it should be Swedish built and Swedish designed. It's Swedish technology. And colleagues of mine have looked at like how these ideas are circulated to China and back, for example. So you will have a Hammarby Sjöstad in China, several of them actually in China. And then the same way that, so Chinese politicians go to Hammarby Sjöstad and look and they bring that back. Swedish politicians go to Freiburg and bring that back. And there's sort of this idea and travel of ideas. Now in Sweden, we're seeing this development, hopefully towards, which again, Sweden is quite behind on the diversity of developments, right? So the diversity of developers. And as I said, it's also to do with our history of these large developers dominating the market. So now there's a lot of talk about bringing in smaller developers and architects as developers. Baugemeinschaft and these concepts of actually going together and sort of acting as the client.
Could you take it again? How was it? Yeah.
Sorry. This idea about diversifying the developers, so who builds, and actually bringing it down closer to the people and preferably then different ideas of developments and how you want to live. One being architects as developers. This is quite small in Sweden and has been for a while compared to other European countries, certainly. This is being discussed as a way to diversify and the development in Vallastaden in Linköping. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's the latest housing expo in Sweden. I was there, and it, for being the front line of housing built in Sweden, it's quite conventional. So, but from an urban planning perspective, they really tried this idea of breaking it down to smaller plots to enable smaller developers to build and also architects building themselves. And the idea there was really to see, can this diversify? I think that's one way of discussing it. And there it's very much breaking away from these standardized. I mean, if you're, again, working for a large-scale developer, you're a large-scale architecture firm, there's conventions and ideas and notions. Whereas the idea is that if you can bring in smaller actors, they can bring these, the vernacular, the traditional, in new ways. So that is very much a discussion, and it's, I would say, also from an eco perspective, it's being discussed in terms of wood construction, right? So can we actually bring in a less carbon sort of, what do you say, a fossil neutral, at least, or that's what they're arguing, way of constructing, and how could you do that as part of also reclaiming a Swedish heritage, building heritage with wood, also in terms of interior environments, so the architectural qualities of wood and wood paneling and so on. So there's a lot of these discussions. I would say it's not necessarily shown. What is built is still very much these same, that look the same here as they do when we export them to other countries. But discussions are as you say, I mean, these are key questions that are being discussed.